Hey, remember to subscribe and follow my podcast so when I release a new episode, you get a notification. And follow me on Instagram. Yes, King Oliver. I am very active on there. Have a great day and enjoy the episode. Nature is the most amazing thing to do on the planet. It solves every problem. It makes you feel fantastic. You get exercise, you feel connected, you get light, you get sun, you feel, it's just the ultimate goal. It's where we've come from and it's where we're not going. It's where we need to go every day. Like, everyone just sits in an office working all day and we need to be going out with nature. It's like, it's almost like you can't choose not to drink water in a day. Right. It's as important as water and sleep. And yet it's taken for granted. We work all day. We're too tired to do anything. And we go back and watch Netflix and sit on our ass. And yet that's why everyone's getting depression, because we're not balancing our energies out with nature.
I couldn't agree more. I'm quite blessed in this current climate. So obviously right now we're in the midst of the global pandemic for the coronavirus. But I happen to be in a really beautiful place. There's a lot of land here. There's a really huge yard, garden, actually trees with stone underneath them to that we could sit, meditate, ground, that kind of thing. It's really, really great. I do spend quite a bit of time indoors still working. When I say working though, it's more growing. Like I've shifted my whole life. So, you know, like you said, we spend so much time at work and then, you know, we're usually pretty exhausted. I know my life before I came here, I'm actually in the UK now. I'm from the United States. Before I got here, I worked, let's call it 8 hours a day. It was fluctuated because I was in technology, but I had about an hour commute each way. So had really long days. And you're right, when I got home, I just wanted to relax, eat, chill out. Even when I did go out, I would go to the gym, come back, never really going outside. And actually not really fluidly understanding how important that was. Nature, energy, connecting, all that kind of stuff. It wasn't until I did discover that and started actually making shifts in my life that eventually what brought me here was quitting my job and pursuing a completely different lifestyle. But it's definitely part of what I do now. I mean, every single morning when we wake up, it's yoga in the morning, usually a walk outside, and then I'll go through some teachings and learnings and whatnot during the day. But then the evenings is another yoga practice, and I try to make sure that I get outside before the sun goes down because it gets cold here in the UK.
Yeah, people, they either have a physical job and they're really, really tired at the end of it, or they sit down on a chair. And from experience, you get so tired sitting on a chair. Like, if anything, you're more tired sitting than on your feet all day, because being on your feet is natural, it's part of nature. Sitting down like that isn't part of nature. That posture is not part of nature. And you're all cramped up and all the blood supply is suppressed and your muscles are stiff and your joints are all cramped. Like, you're going to feel, as soon as you start to move, your body's going to be like, what the fuck is going on? Like, I'm not used to this. Like, I'm used to sitting like, you know, that. And you will find that it's harder to do exercise after you've been sitting down. And yet it's the thing you actually need to do afterwards. Like, people go to the gym after office work. They feel so tired. It's just not part of nature to be sitting in that position. And like, my dad came home from work the other day. He was driving for like 5 hours. And he says, we're normally going to walk after like, you know, late evening for like an hour or so. And he was like, oh, I'm knackered. My back aches. I'm like, your back aches because you were sat in a car for 5 hours. And actually, when you walk, it mobilizes your back. Like, it gets the blood flowing, all the lactic acid, it frees itself. Like, walking is what you need to do when you're tired from sitting down, yet we feel so tired we don't want to walk. And then what do we do? We go and sit on the couch. It's a vicious
circle. Or lay down.
Yeah, it's a vicious circle. That's what I lay down most, more time than sitting, because I know how bad sitting is. And it's, for me, it's walking or lying.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm kind of the same way, actually. Here, it's... There's like a mental shift between, so I'm here with my girlfriend and she can't lay down and work. Like, she'll fall asleep, especially if it's lay down in the bed, like in the bedroom, can't focus, like, cause like, this is not the place for that. So me, it doesn't really matter where I am. And most days when, I was in the States working my full-time job, when I would work from home, most of the day I was laying in bed with my laptop. And I don't know, it wasn't actually a conscious thought for me. It was just, I don't know, maybe more natural, maybe more comfortable. Didn't seem to affect my ability to think. It wasn't like, oh, I'm laying down, so now I need to go to bed. No, it was just relaxed. And for me, actually, it was a lot more about being pain-free. I actually injured my back when I was 18 years old. So there, since then, there hasn't been a day in my life that I haven't lived without pain. So it was a lot more about that. Like when I can feel no pain or very, very little pain, I can finally actually concentrate on what it is that I need to focus on. So I don't know.
Yeah. Like if you think about how many offices there are in the world and how many people are in the corporate mindset, like black and white suit, must wear a tie, must sit up straight. Like people will be so more productive if they have the ability to lie down. Like, I do believe, you know, because I've always pretty much worked from home, I do believe that it's important to have a shower as if you're going to work and then go back to the bed. You can't just sort of wake up, grab your laptop and sort of just drink your tea whilst working. That's very toxic for the mindset. You need to get up, do your teeth, get your clothes on and then lie into bed, make your bed, then lie in if you need a place to lie down, because it's so much more comfortable when you're lying down. It just is, you're in a relaxed mindset. So subconsciously you're in a relaxed state. So you're not stressed. Your wrists aren't fucking up from like sitting on a desk all day. You then have to have your back straight all the time and slouching, your back's flat. I mean, you know, there's a lot of offices that are including plants and like safe space and sleep little rooms. They understand the importance of that, like ping pong tables and pool tables. They're starting to understand what makes an employee better, like getting up an hour later. So coming in at 10 rather than 9, just simple stuff like that. If you give your like employees more control just to get up an hour later, to go in an hour later, that more productive they will be, because somebody on 7 hours sleep versus 6 is a huge difference. Everyone's a robot, but then people are realizing roboticness is not helping, and you need to give some people some form of freedom and control, which is all this Wolf Yogi stuff is about the mind and the body as well. Combine it together and you just find happiness, and when you're happy you'll want to work.
Yeah, it's such a strange dynamic. Like I notice even the people that are teaching in Wealth Yogi, they seem like they work so much more than I used to work, but it doesn't really feel like work, at least not on the same level. I mean, it kind of does, because there's things that you need to get done, things you need to learn, skills you need to practice, whatever it is. And it can go on into the night, midnight, one, we've been up till 2 a.m. I know one of the other Wealth Yogi students had been up till 4 a.m. making calls, because people all around the world are applying for sponsorships for a multitude of Master Shri's programs. But I know, like for me, in the past, the way kind of what brought me here was, like, I think, so the sleep thing, just to touch on that real quick, that's highly variable based on the person. And there's no one specific thing that I did for my own sleep pattern. I just noticed over time, like when I was very young, when I was teenager, slightly younger, even into my early 20s, I needed a minimum of 9 hours of sleep or I could not function. Like I could get up earlier, but I was a zombie and I would just grunt my way through the day. Even though I had a full-time job, the biggest challenge for me and what I used to do, even in my first job in IT, was I had a very large geographic area, and it was like a home base, kind of, you know, like the main office. And so if nothing was going on, that's where I had to be at 8 a.m., which is another thing I think is hilarious, is I hear this a lot in the UK when people talk about jobs and they say the 9 to 5. I don't know where the fuck you guys got that concept, but in America, it's way more than 9 to 5. Like, 9 to 5 would be such a luxury in the US. It doesn't exist, unless maybe you're a bank teller, but even then, that's probably arguable. I used to try to make sure that at the end of the day, if there were any tickets or service calls or something like that I had to attend to, they were at branches that were as close to home as possible, because they didn't open until 9 o'clock. And so then I would just let everybody know, hey, I'm going to be at XYZ location in the morning, which really just meant I get 2 more hours of sleep. That was the whole point. Like and it wasn't about dodging work or being less productive, because actually there was me and one other guy And the two of us had the largest geographic area in all of Florida. The two of us produced more work than 4, 5, and 6-man teams did in smaller areas. So I knew that it wasn't like I wasn't really being lazy per se and not being productive. But so young, I had no concept of that, exactly what you mentioned, like being able to sleep more, come in later, work your own schedule on your terms, like how much more productive you can be. Was I actually at work less hours? Yep. But how was that? Like, I was getting more done, but I still had to hide the fact. I had to essentially lie and fool people into what I was doing or believing what I was doing because I wasn't at work. Yet at the end of the day, the production was still there. Except if anybody had known what I was doing, that was somehow unacceptable. And I mean, that mentality kind of continued throughout my career, no matter where I went. Because I left there, I shifted on to another full-time gig 2 years later. And then after that, there was a huge, the housing market bubble burst. And I was forced to shift into contract work, which was a beautiful thing because it totally shifted my mindset. I had been brought up in that be a company man mentality, you know, stay somewhere 20 years, whatever, and put in your time and get your retirement, your pension, whatever. And I saw very, very quickly that didn't actually exist in my reality. And so I was forced into this zone that I had been programmed to be scared of. And when I got there, I was like, oh my gosh, I get to actually operate exactly the way that I wanted to, which is work the hours that I want to work. Yes, I had to adhere to their schedule, but if I wasn't there, they weren't paying me. So no one cared. So I could come in an hour later. I could leave an hour earlier. I could get the same amount of work done. And technically, yeah, I was making less money than I could, but I was making more money than I did. So I noticed that this huge shift as me, my personal experience going through the working world. And then eventually, I had a great job. I mean, a really, really great job. And I didn't think these things existed. I was a network architect. I had worked there for 4 years. It's a private company. The benefits were fantastic. And I don't mean just simple like healthcare and that kind of stuff. I mean, like, they would, every month there were different reasons for them to throw parties at work. And like you mentioned, they had actually built to us a recreation room that had a pool table and a ping pong table and couches and massage chairs and stuff like that. Which is a great step in the right direction. But the reality of that was, it was sort of a facade. No one was ever really in there because everybody had to work too hard. The expectation was so high that you were always there. So like you could spend your lunch hour there or after work you could go there. But it wasn't very often that people were actually in there. And then when they implemented that system and folks started taking advantage of it, they actually punched out the whole center of the door and put glass in it so they could come and see who's not working. And I'm like, well, then what's the point of this thing? If you build it for the employees to unwind and de-stress, yet every time they're in there, they're stressing out that someone's going to come by and tell on them that they're not working. What's the point of that?
Yeah, that comes down to a boss just wanting money, 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 money. Mm-hmm. Hearing this thing about, okay, well, if employees are happy, they'll make me more money. But then he doesn't understand the psychology of it. He just sees them in there playing and having fun whilst he sees empty desks and he sees them paying them like 20 grand a year coming at the bank. And he reverts back into that pattern. So the difference is that you understand why you're doing it versus just like doing it because you saw it. And that comes down to kind of understanding yourself. If it was you, like, I find that there's a difference between a businessman and an entrepreneur. An entrepreneur like creates and just keeps creating. A businessman went to uni, he's part of the corporate world, follows a boss and has a boss above them, and they just follow the chain of command. So if it's in an office, he's really not an entrepreneur, he's a businessman. His job is to get most profit, make sure people are working. If they say put a pool table in, he puts a pool table in. But then if he sees them play too much pool and having fun, he hears his boss saying, you need to get them back to work. And so he doesn't understand because he's not an entrepreneur. But I've always worked for myself, and the ability to get up when you want is fantastic. I don't believe that you can truly be happy and free and enlightened unless you work for yourself. It's impossible to work for somebody else, getting up at a certain time, having to go to bed at a certain time, just constantly on your feet being told what to do at a certain time, it's not possible because your energy is going out rather than going in. Obviously, you need discipline and schedule and routine when you work for yourself. That's important. Otherwise, you just get up at 10 and lay in bed and go on your laptop and have a nap and then sort of think, well, I normally stop at 4, but I'll just stop at 9 because I'll have a nap for 4 hours. It's just, you need to imagine that you're in an office, but you're working for yourself. And you will truly be happy forever, because when you're happy, your energy is higher and you put more energy out there to get back what you want. So you're working for yourself, you put more calls out there, more clients coming, you're positive, it keeps coming back. As you said, you get more money when you work for yourself than for the company, because when you go for the company, you're stressed, you're tired, your energy is low. And so you haven't got any energy to bring more. You can't even, haven't got what you need for the moment. Working for yourself, you've got all you need for the moment. And you got all this amazing energy going out and bringing stuff back. And so working for yourself is the secret to happiness. However, not everybody can work for themselves. It's easier said than done. You need to have the brain to know what the fuck to do without somebody telling you. And fortunately, unfortunately, you're left with 99% of humans who don't know what to do unless they're told. And the 1% do. So it is easier said than done.
Well, and I believe, I mean, I don't know that I can legitimately back this up with fact, but I believe, and I have always believed, that we're essentially programmed from birth to be that way. And it I don't know how it is in the UK, but just my analysis of growing up in the States and watching how things go in America, something that I didn't hear about the book Think and Grow Rich until about two and a half years ago. And the first time I went through that, the first thing that just leapt out and really resonated with me was Andrew Carnegie's assessment of what a great thing the Great Depression was. And he was talking about the school system and the wonderful motive and idea behind it, but the fact that it had one glaring, like massive problem that was gonna be, and unless you fix this, it's only ever going to slowly get worse. And that's the fact that it's free, because no one appreciates anything that's free. The more you pay, this is something that Master says, the more you pay, the more you pay attention. And that's the reality of it. And I think that now, after so many generations have gone by, this expectation, even entitlement of free education, now kids are so complacent. They hate school. But they don't even realize the school system is programming you to be that corporate automaton, to be that, I don't know what to do unless you tell me what to do, to believe that you're good if you do a good enough job and somebody says attaboy or gives you a raise or gives you a promotion or a new title or whatever. Like, those are the things that they program you to be happy with. And it works for a certain period of time. And I would say, close to my age, like people, I would say it works effectively into their like mid-30s, mid-40s, before they wake up and realize, you know, I've done all this and I've received all those accolades and God damn it, I'm not happy. Like, something is wrong with this system. And that was essentially what spurned me on to start paying attention, to start being open-minded. Fortunately, I just came across a coach. I don't believe that. I mean, I believe it was delivered to me, but it was the right time for me. I was open-minded enough to listen. I was exposed to the secret, the whole concept of energy. And it was difficult for me, like in IT for 21 years, very logic-minded, very skeptical-minded. So the concept like that is completely foreign to the way that I am and the way that I think. But it really just came down to one thing. I asked myself one thing as I was watching this. After it was done, I thought, I really don't, like, if I ask myself if I believe this, obviously the answer is no. So the question isn't whether or not I believe it. Am I going to choose to believe it or am I not? So what happens if I choose to believe that this is all real, the law of attraction, and that everything is energy and everything is and energy is everything? If I choose to believe it and it's bullshit, what changes? Nothing. But if I choose to believe it and it's true, what changes? Everything. Everything changed. And everything has changed. And as I started, that was my first step. Literally my first step. Now, did that make me an instant believer? No. I was, of course, still skeptical minded. But as I stepped through this and I started seeking teachers, I was first exposed to Bob Proctor. And I know for some that really resonates. He's a great teacher. He's the greatest to them. To me, as hard as I tried, didn't work for me. For me, I heard that guy tell the same story over and over and over and over and over again. It was his beginning story. He never gave you any details. He never gave you any meat. He never even pitched. He never even tried to sell. He never said, and buy my course and I'll teach you how. None of that. It was just, this book changed my life. So I read the book 7 times because he told me there was a secret in the book, but he wouldn't tell me. You have to figure it out yourself after reading it enough times. So I kept on going through the book. I don't think I've figured it out yet, but I don't think it matters because he led me to others. The next one that resonated with me most was Abraham Hicks. But honestly, like at that time in my life, it was really, really emotional and I got really depressed. That was too powerful for me. Like it resonated too deep in my heart and there was so much pain that I shifted away. And that's when I found Master. And just the way that he is, the way that he speaks, his honesty, his truth, like, and that he just gives everything away. All the information that I was looking for was free. I ate it up. I would come home, 2-3 hour binge watch YouTube, learning about all things energy, meditation, you name it. I did it. And I started practicing it. From there, amazing shifts in my life. I mean, absolutely amazing. Like meditation led me to a vision of seeing myself on a mountain. I knew it where it actually was. So I traveled all the way across the country. I climbed that mountain. I wish I could show you actually the picture of what was on the top of the mountain. It was absolutely amazing. Like it blew me away when I got there. I was like, oh my God, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. It was almost like someone had built kind of a mini Stonehenge up there. But the mountain that I climbed, there's no path to the top. There's no, like, you've got to be really, really determined to want to get to the top of that mountain because it's pretty sheer and there's lots of, the rock is not solid. It's all little pebbles and stuff. Like, it's treacherous to get up there. I had this amazing experience. There I gained clarity. I carried that with me all the way off of that mountain. It lasted me, I'd say, about 3 days. The next day I flew home. I was truly changed, and that was actually that was November 30th in 2018. I got home. One of the lessons that I had learned from Master via YouTube was that thought, speech, and words all hold vibration. So I finally had the clarity to know exactly what it was that I wanted, because most of us, and again, I kind of speak within the framework of Americans, but most people I come across as well, we're all programmed to believe what we want. Like, I want more money. I want more time. Right? But do you really? I mean, that's a really obvious answer. Those are no-brainer yes kind of topics. But what is it that you want exactly? Do you really want a lot of money, or do you just want time freedom? Do you want enough money? Do you want a house on the beach or a house in the mountains? Or do you want to be in a high-rise? Like, what is it that you actually want? So I had that revelation before I went to the mountain, because I was like, oh my God, I thought I knew what I wanted, but I really don't. So when I came back, it was 3 things specifically. So the first thing, that as soon as I thought it, I wrote it, and then I spoke it out, because I was looking for every advantage I could, man, like vibration at all 3 levels. first one was that I wanted to learn how to make I was very particular about the words that I used. So one of the many things I learned along at that point in my journey, that I wanted to learn how to make just as much or more money as my annual salary online, so that I don't have to be slave to my job. The second thing was that I would attract my perfect partner. Like I said, that was November 30th. December 2nd, when I got home from, actually, it was a Sunday. I think I got home from the gym that day. I saw that Master had gone live on YouTube with his brother Hero, and that Hero was running a digital marketing program to learn how to make money online, and that Master was going to sponsor 5 people. It's actually a really, really interesting story, like from start to finish, how that all worked out. But I'll fast forward through all that and say, skip to the part where I was one of those five. So right away, like, of the three things that I wrote down, one, bam, started happening instantly. December 16th, that was actually a really hilarious day. Sometime in the summer, I had jumped on a dating site, and about a month and a half in, I got tired of it. I was like, these women are crazy. I don't, I'd rather be alone for a while. Like, if this is going to be like this. So, I just kind of checked out. That December 16th, I got an email saying, oh, hey, it was the site, like, you're going to auto renew. And I was like, the fuck I am. I'm no way. So I log in. I logged in and I started deleting everything off my profile to save it, because I know they'll just regurgitate that crap and act like they got, you know, like I'm real or something. So I go in there to do that and make sure that I cancel it, because I don't want anybody to do it. And I had five messages, and one of them, I was like, I mean, three were pretty attractive women, I guess. But like one of them, I was like, oh, wow, she's really pretty. And like, she had sent me a message. So I was like, I'll just check right before I go. And I clicked on it. And I was literally blown away. Like, there was this full paragraph, and it had like proper grammar, capitalization, punctuation, sentence structure. I was like, holy shit, she's got a brain. This is amazing. So I did something that I've never done before, which was, I was just honest with her. I said, hey, look, this is the situation. Like, I'm out today. If you're comfortable with it, here's my phone number. Send me a text or call if you want, but I'm gone. She did. 9 days later, on Christmas Day, we had our first date. It was 10 hours long. She's in the other room right now. She's the most amazing creature on this planet. I can't believe that someone like her actually even exists. Like, all of the things, and I was very specific. There were 37 specific things I wrote about what would make up my perfect partner. Within a week, she had knocked out 33 of them. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this. So there was the second one. And then I had received a phone call about being in Miami for an event on January 5th. January 5th was the day I actually, like, in physical presence, met Master Sri. The third thing that I wrote down was that I would work with him and become a great leader one day. I've spoken on his stage twice. I've quit my job. I'm in the UK. I'm in Lincoln with him. I've been to his house collaborating. I think this would be the first time that anything is actually being said kind of publicly, but I'm unofficially right now part of the team, but Christina and I are actually taking over one of the business funnels for speaking. Huge shift in life, man. Nothing I ever would have thought of. Like, I didn't write down, oh, I want to be a speaker one day, because I don't think a lot of people would believe it. Like, I don't even say this to anybody because it's kind of Master's story. And I don't want people to get the wrong impression and think that I'm just copying his template or his story to, because it works for people. No, it's not the case. But the reality was, I was super shy. I was a really shy guy, like, especially as a kid, and slowly over time, I never saw myself as a speaker, public speaker, stage speaker, even like this podcast, be on camera, like all that stuff. I used to be like, no, that's not me. In fact, I think from about 13 years old till in my late 30s, there's probably a dozen pictures of me that exist. I didn't even want to be behind a camera, you know. But yeah, it's just it was such an amazing journey, and it's not even over. Like, you know, I'm still actively in my third manifestation, and so many things keep coming. Like, all this opportunity, and that's, I think, something else that a lot of people need to know. Even if it's just this, and it's kind of a Richard Branson quote. I don't remember his quote exactly, but it goes essentially something like, when an opportunity presents itself, say yes and figure it out later. But that's a teaching that Master gives, and something that I have taken on. And you just get used to saying yes to things. like, I don't know where this is going to go, but yeah, I'll do it. Yes, I'll try it. And for me, it was like, okay, yeah, I'll coach, I'll speak. Is it scary? Heck yeah. But when you bust through that, it's amazing. Like, the amount of lives that I've impacted already, people I don't even know. I mean, I've called people up because they've applied for sponsorships on some of the master's programs. I could literally leave, well, not right now because we're in lockdown because of the pandemic, but when that's over, I could leave here, quit everything I wanted to do. And I could travel around this world, like all the connections that I've made with people. I've been invited to so many places on this planet. I could probably spend the next 2 or 3 years visiting people. It's amazing.
So what I will say based on that is my next step on my vision board is to be hired to speak at an event, multiple events. So my next step is, so the first part is putting my knowledge out there in the form of podcasts. The next step is somebody will come across my podcast and be like, holy shit, I need you to speak at my event. You have got knowledge, brain, fucking energy, like you have a story, and they'll fly me out and I'll speak at the event. That's my next step on my vision board. And, you know, I go on a long walk, I have a shower, I meditate, and I say, it's coming. I'm, you know, like at some point they'll reach out to me on Instagram, they'll email me, YouTube, somebody somehow, somewhere, I don't know when, who, when, how, might be you, who knows, will be like, hey, I'm looking for speakers. I've listened to your shit. You're fucking good, man. When can you schedule a video call? And then they ship me out, fly me out, whatever, and I speak. And then that is the next stage of my life, doing speaking events, mixing with people, also other speakers and other people. And then you do that event, and then you do that event, and then you do that event. And the end goal is to have my own speaking event. So I put my own production and speak, like run the show myself, basically, you know, hire the venue, get the tickets in, speak on the stage. That is the end goal. But you need to get your name out. They need to get a following. You need to get money to pay for your shit, which comes from the speaking. And then you end up paying, say, 25K for a big event. And then you put it on yourself. But that is my end dream. But it's interesting how my next stage is a speaker hiring me. That's all I'm going to say.
Nice. All right. So I'm going to have to target you. In my next ad campaign, I think when we shape up the speaker funnel.
No, listen, like, you know, what's amazing about, you know, Bob Proctor, he actually was somebody who I obsessed with in the early beginning stages. Like, I listened to all of his videos, literally the one where he's got the whiteboard and the brain and the paradigm and the A to the B and then you fall. I've always been somebody who's been too far forward in life. My dad's always said, slow down. I've always been too far ahead. I jump in and figure it out fucking never, because I'm always focusing on to the next bit. So I'm the complete opposite of extreme to what most people are. Most people, they struggle to get that and then they relapse. I was always fucking so far in the future. I had no friends, no one liked me, just doing my own shit. I'm just focusing on making it, like, just keep going. And then I look back and I'd fucking bought hundreds of domain names, millions of websites, fucking emails and passwords all over the place, ideas coming up my asshole, right? And then at this same school, I had Tourette's growing up, right? And Tourette's is brain activity, excessive brain activity, which causes you to twitch because you're stimulating other face muscles. And the medication, which is supposed to help the twitching, which it did, it slows the brain down. But my thoughts never had answers because the medication slowed the brain down. So I had 10 years or 15 years of thoughts from 5 years old, twitching till I was 21. So much thinking and twitching because I couldn't work out, is there a God, chicken or the egg? Like, I can see more, work for myself, basically get a job, can't you be normal? And it was just too much. And then I came across all these videos online about power of the mind, law of attraction, and how medication suppresses the brain, meditations, you know. And I literally came off my medication in one night. 3 weeks later, my twitching stopped completely because I'd thought about all the things I couldn't think about growing up as a kid. And I was in a meditative mindset for so long that I had the ability to make my Mac turn on. I could make lights flicker. I had magical powers. I could, because my energy was so strong, it was interfering with stuff. My TV would click. I'd be like, should I do this today? And the TV would click, you know, click twice if I should, click once if I shouldn't. And it would go, No joke. I used to make things click and like interfere with energy sources because my energy was so strong. Medication suppressed my energy inside me my whole fucking life. I spent my whole life in my head thinking and thinking excessively, where I didn't know what it was like to be aware because I was always in my head at school. Never understood anything. I was in my head, always just in my head, basically. It was like being a blind man who could now see. That's the only way I could explain it. So I had meditation for the first time ever. No voice in my head, no thoughts, no medication, no twitching. My bad acne, that went because it was the stress which was creating all the spots. I mean, boils on my face, fucking boils everywhere, yeah? 3 weeks, it literally all disappeared, all because I didn't have any brain activity. And it told me that everything in life, almost every problem, physically and mentally, is based on brain activity. It's energy, right? And people control their thoughts, they meditate, and they can control everything. Like, the brain is, I call it the source of, it's the chief. It's not the CEO, it's the fucking president above, like, who controls the board. Like, you know, I can't even explain, you know all this, but, yeah, just fucking incredible. Like, Tourette's, you can't cure it, apparently. And that was what I was always told. And when you, as again, you follow the system of go to school, get a job, you've got this cancer, you've got it for life, it might come back, you know, brother's got heart disease, it's in the genes, grandfather died of a heart attack, it's in the genes, oh, I'm going to die anyway, I'll support him, I was going to eat burgers all day. You just follow the systematic bullshit. You get medication for depression, anxiety. The problem's still there, you just can't see it because of the medicine. You have a bad leg, take steroids, you can't feel it. Oh, and then you fucked it all up because you're putting pressure on the leg. And you're fucking up the joints even more, right? And everyone buys into this bullshit. My parents did. They try to get me back on the medication. And I had to learn magic to try and make them believe I took it when I didn't, just to get it out of my system. Like in Iron Fist on Netflix, if you've seen it, where they try and put him on medication because he has all these powers saying he's the Iron Fist. And he has to, like, spit it out at the end because it takes control of your brain to the point where you can't think about, why am I on this medication? Why am I twitching? And I came off the meds just like that, and everything was clear. I saw why my parents were like that. I saw my problem. I saw why the doctor was saying that. I saw the school. I saw God. I saw governments. I saw fucking everything, right? I was blind my whole life, and I could see. And this is the story that I'll be teaching on stage, but it's merely the story of the enlightenment process of how I was trapped. And basically, my aim in my life is to heal and enlighten as many people as possible, yeah? Where, like as you said, Bob Proctor was one teacher. I'm another teacher. Your wealth yogi man's another teacher. Abraham Wicks. They're all different teachers, and each person learns the same thing in a different way based on the level of where they are in their life. So Bob Proctor resonated with me, not so much with you. Abraham Hicks resonated with you. I don't think I read his book. I'm probably listening to it on YouTube whilst I was sleeping because I had to play all this shit whilst I was sleeping. But different people resonate different times. And yep. My journey and my story is just another teacher of going through a path of like going towards hell and then realizing shit, it's only getting hotter, and then turning back. And then the process of what happens when you turn back, and the older you get, the more you have to undo. So it's harder when you're older, because you might have a mortgage, you might have a wife, you might have kids. You like, Nan's moved in, like, fuck me, like, what do I do? Nan, you got to move out. Why? Well, I'm gonna because I'm working for myself. It's like, what do you want about getting a normal job? And that's where the problem is, Nan. You're telling me to get a job like you did, and you're trapped, because if you had work for yourself, you'd have more money. You're believing in my garage. So yeah, it's just that story of enlightenment and how there is a way out. And you're just guiding, like enlightening people. You're guiding them towards. I believe that you can't teach somebody each single step. You can only be like the Bob Proctor, the me, the Abraham Wicks, the secret, the whatever your mate's called, Yogi Man. They're just stepping stones. That you can't focus on one to guide you. They're just stepping stones. And each person, like Branson for me, and then it was Russell Brand, and it was Richard, and then it was Darren Brown, and then it was Trump. And all these people have got me to the next level. And that's really all you can do. You just help as many people as possible to get to their next stage.
Right. And it's an amazing, like the most amazing feeling when you have such a positive impact on somebody's life. And there, I mean, that alone, just witnessing that is incredible, but they just pour it back. Like they just, oh my God, you changed my life. You're so amazing. They're so grateful for you. And honestly, it when you hear all that feedback, it's like I deliberately did something to help you, but in reality, I didn't. I didn't do anything abnormal for me. I was just being me, right? It wasn't like I made this decision, I'm going to do something special for this person and make them feel this way. No, you just, I kind of hate to use the term be yourself because I don't really believe in that. Mostly because people don't know who they really are. It's funny, like so many people, like I just want to be me. I just want to do me, whatever it is. I want to be able to be myself and be what I want. Like I hear that, in a one-on-one setting, like, who are you then? Like, you tell me, like, what is you? And if they actually have an answer, I'm like, and where did that come from? Were you born that way? Did you just come out and be like, this is who I am? No. Every single time the answer is no. You were programmed to believe that that is who you are or who you should be. Do you know who you actually are? Like, who you actually should be? What your purpose actually is here? What makes you truly happy? Like, so many people, they think they know. Well, where did that idea come from? If it wasn't your own, then who are you? Who are you really? Like, what is your authentic self? Do you even know?
Yeah. So like growing up, it was, I truly believe that we are destined for one thing. There's always one purpose, but we can dream many things. So I would love to have my own talk show. I'd love to do a bit of singing, a bit of acting. But what am I going to be doing afterwards? It's like I go there to come back to what? For me, it's speaking, it's talking, it's teaching, it's helping, it's enlightening. Like, I was a very needy child growing up for my parents, right? Always about getting a reaction from my mum and my dad, good or bad. Oliver, shut up, or just a reaction, yeah? I'm used to doing something and getting a reaction, writing on a birthday card, love you, mum, whatever. Oh, thank you so much. I need that reaction. So when you help somebody for free, like offer to cut their grass, for example, or when you purposely say, I'll come around and organize your garage. I'm doing it for me, not for you. You're benefiting, but I feel so good doing something so good for you that I feel good. You always feel guilty how you're doing it for me. It's almost like psychology. Like, I know if I do this, I'm going to feel really good. You think it's for you, but it's actually for me. But it's not. You shouldn't feel guilty. It's just how it works. Like, do something good for your parents, you get a reaction. Now I want to dedicate my life because I've had everything. I don't want kids. I don't want to get married. All I have ever known is to do good and get good back. So give to my parents, give back. Now I just want to do that for as many people as possible because I need that reaction. I need that gratitude that Oliver, you're amazing. Oliver, you're great. Oliver, you're so good. You changed my life. Oliver, thank you, thank you, thank you. It's an addiction. Like, that's all I've ever known. My dad's saying, you're so great. You can be anything you ever want. You can do this, you can do that. He was always the best at everything. We go on holiday, play pool, play ping pong, play darts. He was always the best. He was always winning. You're so lucky. He always wins the money in the pot at the pool. Water polo, I've always seen the greatest. He was the best boxer in the country once upon a time, amateur days. All I've seen is greatness, and I looked up to him to be as great. And I just want to, I don't need anything in life. I just need to just get a reaction and do good and put out there. And I am dying for my shot. I am dying, my friend. Yeah, 80 podcasts down, I know I'm one podcast away from that one call, from that one person who's got that one platform who will put me on that stage, right? I am dying. Right. And I know I just have to keep doing what I'm doing. I said to my dad the other day, do I go into London and start trying to, give out free tickets to an event and speak in Hyde Park, for example, and start teaching? He says, you need to focus on one thing. The thing you've never done is focus on one thing for long enough where it materializes, because I'm the best at everything, right? Because I want to be the best at everything. But I get impatient. So I go on to the next thing. It's like Tai Lopez, make money online, how to become a stock trader, drop shipping, Amazon, Wealth Yogi. It was always like 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. And I realized that we always go back. Chickens come home to roost. You always go back to what you always wanted. What was that? I've always been a talker from 4 or 5 years old. I was always the kid in the classroom talking and talking and talking, whilst all the other kids were just there normal reading their book, right? And asking the teacher questions. Why, daddy, why, mummy, why? Fucking why? And so what I'm trying to say is that you always go back home to who you really are. If you are a talker, you're going to talk. it's just you do a full circle and you explore, but you always go back home. If you are a musician, you always go back to music. If you're a sports person, you always go back to sports. If you're gay, for example, you always go back to being gay 40 years later. And I am a talker and I need a reaction, and I love praise and saying, Oliver, you're so great. That's all I've ever known. So by giving out, helping people, as you said, just by me being me, telling my story is enough. I don't need to do anything else. I don't need to sell any packages, how to become rich, how to do this. Just talk, tell your story. People will see that what I went through, they can get there. And you're just a stepping stone. I'd love to nurture each, take everyone along the whole journey, but I realized through trying with my friends, unless they're on that path anyway, you can't pull them forward. You let go and they relapse back, like they just suck back. I enlightened my parents. I spent 3 years enlightening my parents after I learned enlightenment myself. I taught them everything, my mum first for a year, then my dad for a year, and then I taught them together. I healed their marriage because they were going to divorce. I binned everything in the loft, I binned everything in the garage, I binned everything in the house, because you had to start all over again because I had their problems, which is why I had my problems. And I was so aware, I saw that was why I was like it. You're telling me no because you were told no. And I had to reprogram all the computers. My dad was a computer. I had to reprogram him. And then 3 years later, I got a part-time job. Never had a job before. I'd always worked for myself because I had no money. I shut my business down, right? And then like 2 years later, what the fuck am I going to do with myself? 2 years later, now I realize I need to speak, be patient, because that's the things I've never done. Consistency and patience. I said to my dad, should I just keep podcasting or should I go into London? Should I do this, do that? He says, just keep podcasting, stick to it. You've planted your seed, water it, make sure it's got sun. Don't plant another seed because that seed will die. And it all starts all over again. That is me and my whole life, starting something and never finishing it because I was just, it never happened quick enough.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm fucking destined, not destined. I am so close to launching myself. I said to my dad, I've been a product ready for 7 years. Literally.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know where I'm going, what I'm doing.
That's the fun part. Just not knowing where you're going, just flowing. Yes. Yes, I'll do that. Well,
now, yeah. Like now, like, but that... And, you know, getting to that place was a big deal too, because for me, previously, all the fun parts of my life were when, in reality, things were the most boring because they were reliable and I felt like I was in control. Because when I grew up, like as a kid, even when it was just like when I was real, real young, single digit kid, it was just me and mom, and we were moving around all over the place. I didn't even know what was going on. I was too little to know. Then she met my stepdad, and I was about 7, so like 3 years later, I'm 10, and then overnight I'm the oldest of 4, and whole life changed, and not for the better, but it was a struggle then. It was a huge struggle, just the two of us. And then when she finally met somebody, it seemed like things kind of stabilized. I don't know. Like, I guess the things that I noticed as a child were like, before that, she was gone all the time. I'm sure it was because she was probably working 2 jobs, and this would have been like late 70s, early 80s. So not the best time for single women with a kid. But for me, it was just, I was always at somebody else's house. Like, I mean, it was obviously babysitting, right? But I noticed, you know, when he came around, that I got to be home more. And that meant I got to play more, like, in the way that I wanted to, with the things that I wanted to do. Mom was around more. So, like, it was good. Like, it started to get kind of good. And then suddenly, boom, not only was I, like, thrust into all this responsibility that I shouldn't have had because I was just a kid. But we also, I mean, it was such a stress financially. We were always broke. It's always, I mean, that was a lot of stress. And so I saw that life, and I saw so many people living it. Not just us. We weren't unique. You know, there was a lot of people that were struggling. And I knew I didn't want that life, but I had no idea how to get out of it. I ended up going to a technical high school to learn a skill, because I knew that if I went to a regular high school, I'd be just another idiot out on the street with nothing, with no skill. But even that was a battle. I mean, I literally had to fight with my parents to be able to go to the school that I wanted to go to and sell them on the idea that this would make me better. And they're like, oh, only stupid kids go to that high school. And you know, this was so much resistance. And I didn't even make it through that. Like, I mean, I eventually did graduate, but there was such static on the end. And I ended up getting kicked out of the house when I was 16. So a lot of that, like, learning hard knock kind of situation and that suffering, not just as a child growing up, but then being forced out and having to figure it out on my own, that when I finally got into technology and I finally started making some money, those were the happy times, because it was even keel. Like, you know, I made this much, but I was required to spend this much. Now, I spent this much because I never could before. And I had all this money that, like, I could do the things I wanted to. I could get a nicer car. I could buy whatever it was that I wanted for my home, my apartment, that kind of thing, a new stereo or computer, games, whatever it was I wanted to do, I could finally do it. And so those were the, like, for me, those were the happy times in my life. And I associated that with money, time, which I didn't really have a lot of. But whatever time I had, I spent doing what I wanted to do. And that was all entertainment, but also interaction. And that was the piece that I didn't really notice. Like, I never, ever would have classed myself as an extrovert. But, you know, my Christina reminds me of that all the time. She's like, you need people. You need attention. You need, like, you need to be out there. Like, you need that interaction with folks, whether I'm serving or whether I'm just contributing or involved in something or just getting out doing something. Like, she's like, that's what made you. You are totally different. When I'm like that, my energy goes way up. Like, I can stay up later. I can do more. I can focus more because I'm engaging. Like, I'm engaging with people. When I'm in that lifestyle that I just described, like what used to make me happy, right? I'm really bored. Like, I get bored and I get down. Not like, I wouldn't say I get depressed, but, like, you know, my energy should be here and usually is, and it'll come down. Because I'm like, I want to be outside. I want to talk to the neighbor. I want to talk to my friends. I want to take time off and just interact with her, like, whatever it is. So it's really interesting, because, like, it's just like you say, you know, you revert back to your you, but which version of you, like the you that you programmed or the you that you truly are? Because I think I've experienced both of those in my life. And there were times when I reverted to that me that had been programmed. And that was anytime I felt comfortable in a job. I, you know, like, my income had gone up quite a bit. I usually relocated somewhere, so I found a cheap place to live. And I was happy. Like, most of the places that I was happiest living were the crummiest places that I lived. Like an apartment, like a two-room apartment or something like that. And barely having anything. A blow-up bed and a fold-out table. It's all I need. Put my clothes in cardboard boxes. I don't care. But then I've had, you know, the dead opposite. I've had big homes, way bigger. Even my home now, like, I mean, it's back in the States, but my home now is way bigger than I need it to be. 4-bedroom house. And it's a beautiful home. It's a new home. Don't need it all. It's legit. I bought it as an investment, but also because I need a place to live. And it's a nice place. Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not complaining about having it, but I don't appreciate it for what it is. It's just a house. It's just a box that I live in. You know, I don't need all the space necessarily.
It's very interesting, because when I die, I want to be the richest person on the planet. But I also but it's because I want to give it back. Right. Mm-hmm. And ironically, I always had dreams of, like, the biggest house and all the cars and the jets and the boats. No joke. I just want to buy a bit of land and build a wooden cabin, have my own water heated by the sun. And, you know, have, like, you press a lever and the water comes through. The solar panel heats the water from the rain, so I've got the hot. I have a log fire, so no electricity, no gas. I have a farm full of animals, every single animal. I have all the food growing there, and I live in such nature. But when I come into materialistic world, I then go on stage and I speak and I make money. But it's funny, because I want to be traveling the world talking and healing people, and I'll be getting paid a load of the money. It's just going to sit in the bank. I won't need to buy a big house because I'm not home. When I am home, it's fuck all to do. And why would I need a fucking £20 million house, which I might have for the sake of it, but like, why not? Yeah, my parents can live in it. But it's like, well, you work for this money, you get the big house, but then you're not in it anymore. And it, when you're there, it's just, now what? It's just fucking inconvenient. It's got a Hoover, 40 rooms, cut the fucking massive lawn, which cost me £70 a week. Like, bloody, it's like, what the fuck? I just want some land, a wooden shed, a wooden cabin, a bed. My animals can come in when they want, and a log fire, and enjoy good food. That I won't need that house because I'll be traveling. Like, I want to be speaking in India and then being on the beach in India, going to China, Chinese culture, and then Himalayas, the mountains, and Iceland. I won't want to be home. So it's ironic when you just do what you love doing. It's not about the money. That's what I'm trying to say. All these packages, they sell how to make money. And you go down there, you spend £500 in a Tai Lopez package, and you go back because you wanted the money, which is why you went down there. But if you're not happy, like you weren't doing your technology thing online, you're not going to be happy. Happiness comes from just being happy, and ironically money comes when you're happy, because it's not about the money, it's about being happy. And when you're happy, it sells to people and they want more of that happiness. And it's just service, and service is just trading this cabbage with this orange, cut my grass, I'll cut your hair. That's just money. And when you're happy to serve everyone and every fucking person out there, you've got £10 for cutting someone's hair, £10 for the orange, £10 for the grass, £10 for washing the cars, all this money coming in, that it feels so good serving that you don't need the money, and you don't need to go home and watch Netflix, because you're just in service. And as you said, there's no better feeling than serving humans and them saying thank you. It's an addiction. It's the highest drug on the planet. Positive energy, charging me. I'm supercharged. Now I can supercharge you. That's the reason why I want money. Just so I can have the most pleasure in going to a London and putting every homeless person up in a Premier Inn or a Travelodge for a year, all paid outright, and just saying, come on, you, let's go. Take him to the shops, get him some nice clothes. I say, look, you've got a year to sort your shit out, because after this year, you're going to not have the hotel anymore. So you ground everyone up, you put them in the hotel, you could teach them, I'll get somebody to teach them law of attraction, whatever, and you give them a chance, and like, just like fun shit. I mean, just money for me is about service. It's not about getting what I want. As I said, you get a car, now what? It's about just doing good things, like going into the Tesco supermarket, paying for 10 people's lunch and shopping just for no fucking reason why. Getting a random bag and giving it to some random person in the street, that is a reaction. That's the fun. Throwing money in the air and everyone grabbing it, that is why I want money, because it's just a reaction. It's just love. It's positive energy. It's easier said than done, of course, because, you know, this is not the normal type of behavior, thinking like that. Like, you want to be rich to give it out, and who the fuck does that? But that's what I want to do. Just serve.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I say money is a magnifier, you know, and like a lot of people, so like the vast majority of people are programmed to believe that money's bad. Like, I mean, I'm sure even you could finish the sentence if I said money is the root of all
evil.
Then why? Why isn't it the root of all good?
People who really want money try and take it from other people when it's not theirs to take, and it causes issues and problems and family breakups, and then you're nicking out taking grandma's ring worth £2,000 when she passed away, she gave to the sister, and you nick it on Christmas Day, the brothers sell it, and it just causes arguments because they're trying to take somebody else's as well.
But even that's programming. Like, even that thought process is belief system, right? That needs to be torn out and reprogrammed, because money's not bad. Money's a magnifier. And it's hilarious because it's even worse in a spiritual crowd. Like, spiritual people, not even so much as like money's not important, but they tend to be very anti-money. Like, if you have it, you're bad somehow. No, money is just a magnifier of who you are. Like, I already know what you would do if you had money. If you had billions of dollars, I bet you in a few years, you probably wouldn't have it anymore, because you would be giving it all out, helping people as much as you can, which is why it's important to generate so much income so that you can keep up that positivity. And that's the thing. So many positive people, they're not actually focused on generating income because it's a positive thing. And they also, because of that disbelief or that wrong belief system that money is bad, they now associate that automatically to the pursuit of money is bad. And we're taught that too, that that's greedy and selfish and those are all bad things. No, it isn't. I quit my job to pursue this life so that I could have the opportunity to blow up my income, because I know that with a stage presence, I'm going to change lives. I'm going to empower people. I'm going to make a huge difference, not just for, like, individual people, but globally is the goal. And so many people are like, whatever, you know, pipe dream. There's a million coaches and speakers, whatever. They never do anything. And what's so special about you? Everything. What's so special about the people who've done it? What's so special about the Tony Robbins and the Grant Cardone and the Ty Lopez?
It's just another you and me, but yeah, exactly. At the beginning stage, before no one knew us.
Exactly. That's all it is. And do you think that people told them the same thing? You can't do this. You can't do that. You shouldn't even try. Yeah, of course they
Absolutely.
Did.
Absolutely. It's all part of the story. It's Jesus mm-hmm. tells Monk. Monk tells Buddha. Buddha tells your matey wealthy guy. You tell me. I tell you. I tell. It's just the same. The same knowledge getting passed down. It's funny because mm-hmm. I've gone from wanting to be so rich for me to I'm guilty that I should be thinking about money because I have true happiness, which is what people want. And then I've gone to, well, everything trades in money and I can't help unless I have money. So I need to get back my entrepreneurial mindset of I want to be a fucking trillionaire before I die, take over everything, not because I want to feel powerful, but so I can make money to then distribute it. I have to get back into that. I can't help unless I have money to make me not feel guilty, because it's true. Spiritual people realize that money is just a bit of trade. But when everything is in money, you can't serve to the best of your ability without money. So you have to make money to give out. You know, it's Jeff Bezos, all these rich people. Mm. They've got so much money, they write a check and it spreads out. I can't see where that's going. I don't want to be, you know, this little donkey in a field needs you in Africa. Give him £5 and, you know, fucking you can sponsor him. I don't care. Let that donkey die. I want to see the donkey myself. Give him a carrot, okay? I want to control the things that make me feel good. What good is it writing a check? Anyone can do that. I want to go to mm-hmm. Africa, build the huts myself. I want to put those homeless people, round them up myself, not get someone working for me to go and find them. Yeah, they can do the program because I'll be busy doing other shit, but I want to round them up and see their reaction when I put them into the Premier Inn. That's a hotel, by the way. That, to me, that's the feeling. Like, what's the point of having money unless you're going to actually physically do it? Like, yeah. I mean, you need to feel that connection, that human looking at you going, thank you, my friend. Thank you for, like, building this or doing this or paying for my dad's chemo or paying for my bills, which, you know, give people a break, man. Because I wanted a break so bad. I still haven't had my break. And I know how desperate I was, that I was dying for somebody to see something in me. I'm talking, I was 16, 17, 18. I believed I could run Virgin when I was 18. In my head, I could. Now I could. Back then, looking at myself, of course I fucking couldn't. But it was about my ability to lead. What was I going to say? I forgot what I was going to say.
Virgin.
Yeah, never mind. It'll come back. it's about that human connection and that energy transferring from you to me. The acknowledge of, oh yeah, I wanted my break so bad when I was younger, because I've always been like this since I was like 13. Nothing's changed. I've only got more and more and more. That I was dying for someone to give me a shot. I was emailing Virgin, a big company, saying, let me run it. No university degree, no management degree. Let's call it 16. Just run my own little business, my mindset. And I was like, let me run the company. Because in my mind, I could, not realizing they're not going to look twice at some 16-year-old who's just left school saying he can run Virgin. I was emailing Branson saying, let me run the company. Like, I was dying for someone to see what I could do. And still, because I went off of my enlightenment and, you know, realized it wasn't that what I wanted, it was other things. And then you've got to find a way to get back into the system of money. And then you've got to think, what do I fucking want? Is it drop shipping, Amazon, whatever? And it always goes back to the basics. I remember putting on my Facebook page when I was like 16 or whatever. No, whatever, 14, motivational speaker. Because I used to I used to piss all my friends off. Why are you smoking? You shouldn't smoke. You shouldn't drink. And I used to parent all my friends. And they used to say, you know, you should be a motivational speaker. And I said, lecture my dad about all this stuff and why people smoke and these, their societies. Like, you sound like you're fucking Russell Brand and all that stuff. You should be a motivational speaker. And I put my Facebook thing, job at motivational speaker. Ironically, that was like, you know, 10 years ago. But the point I'm saying is that the full circle comes back around. What you're destined to be, you're going to be. Even your dreams might be someone else. My dream was to have a talk show when I started with podcasting. But I'm realizing my desk then, what would I really, really, really want to do as a choice is just stand on stage. I'd do that for free. Just speak, you know? Buy me lunch. That's worth £3. That's my paycheck. Yeah? Make sure it's Marks and Spencer's, which is like quality, not shitty corner shop food. I spoke for an hour, my friend. Just give me some fucking quality food. Some microwave shit.
Oh, man. That's awesome. Yeah. I don't know what's in store. I know that it's going to be focused on speaking. I got no idea what direction it's going to go. I don't know if that's just what I'm going to do, or if I'm going to learn that and then take that someplace else. You know, I don't know. I'm just, I'm here now. And it's, you know, it's an interesting story, and it like what you spoke about, I think everybody has that exact same journey of like phases of life where, you know, from zero to whenever, there's a lot of just joy in what you're doing. It's all that learning, you know, like not understanding what hot is, you know, that like there's so much joy in learning. It's like learning. And then you get to that place where you want to be rich, and for all the wrong reasons, you know what I mean? You want to be rich just so you can fuck off, and you want to go party and take planes everywhere and boats everywhere and do all the exotic things that you can and all that. And at some point along the way, for the vast majority, that dream usually just dies, and then their life flatlines, right? But, you know, as you mentioned, like suddenly then you discover happiness, if there's a next phase, right? If you flat, like most people, they just flatline the rest of their lives. The next phase for people though is realizing that you can be happy. And then there's the figuring out that happiness isn't dependent on money. And then that's kind of the next break, especially with a lot of spiritual people, like we were talking about before, where, they assume that happiness means no money, no pursuit of money, which is not true. They've incorrectly associated that you can't be happy with money. No, you can be happy with money. You could probably be a lot happier with more of it, but just because you don't have it doesn't mean that you can't be happy. And then they migrate more towards kind of like we're at right now, where seeing the value of money, accepting the fact that we live in a world full of money and we have to wear clothes, even if they're not branded. We have to eat every day. We need a place to sleep, you know, like that kind of stuff. And all that costs money. You can't live without money. So what are you going to do? Are you going to trade life for money? Because that's what everybody does. Everybody like thinks that they get paid for their time. They don't get paid for the time. It's real simple. And for people watch this podcast an hour later, who disagree with me, start your watch, start counting right now, and then tell me in an hour how much more money you have in your bank account. You don't get paid for your time. You trade your life for time, or for money, not your time for money. No one cares about you or your time. They want, you know, chunks of your life. And that was, for me, like, I think it was the biggest driver of why I needed change. I didn't even know what the change was. I just knew I needed to change because, like, I was tired of trading my life. I didn't want that to be my life. But the best thing about it, so like, I meet the most amazing woman, want to spend all my time with her. Can't, because I have to go to work. And bookending work is a long, stressful, angry, traffic-ridden commute. So I'm stressed when I get to work. I'm stressed when I get home. Looking forward to spending time with her. Have chores to do, whatever. And I'm like, this isn't, I get home, it's not even the best of me. The best of me, those other people gave me money for. The best of me was over there during the day. Now I'm burned out. I don't want to do anything. I mean, not nothing, but I don't have that energy. And I don't even have the time now. I've got a couple of hours, then I have to go to sleep, rinse, repeat, get up, do it again and again and again. For what? Living for the weekend? For 2 days?
Yes, exactly. Fucking hell.
Out of seven? Fuck that mess. No, I don't like it. And like I said, comparatively speaking, I know literally, I know that there are people on this planet who would kill somebody to get my job. I know that. But that doesn't mean I have to just sit in that job and be a good little lemming the rest of my life. Like, I just wasn't happy. So I had to do something. And that was the thing. For me, that was the kind of the beginning of my awakening. I was like, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way. And simply just focusing on money, it wasn't the answer, but it was the beginning for me, because I knew finances was what was going to get me out. So how do I figure out how to do that? How do I find a way to crank up my income? Because no one had to tell me this. I knew all that. I figured all this out on my own. I just pay attention. All of the most successful people, all of them, they were not born that way. They were born under the same, similar, or worse conditions that I was. And most of them did not go to college, if not all of them.
Probably all of them.
not all of them. No. Warren Buffett did.
99%.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, like over 90% sure. But I know Warren Buffett did. I know Bill Gates did. So, I mean, there's a few that who did. But so many of them did not. So many of them invested in themselves. And that was finally the thing that clicked for me. It was like, invest in myself. So that was the first, because it wasn't like, how do I make the money, right? There's lots of get-rich-quick schemes out there. None of them work. But I knew that, like, obviously people do it. It can be done. So how do I, if I can't access those people, because that would be my first choice, right, was hang out with the Bill Gateses and the Richard Bransons and the Tony Robbins and whatever, like the guys who have crushed it, and be like, teach me to do what you do. Shit, I'd give you 50% of my take for the rest of my life if you could just teach me that. Because 50% of that life is way beyond anything I'd ever dreamed of anyway. So that was my first shift. Find a mentor, invest in yourself. And that was really difficult for me because I didn't see any value in it. I really didn't. But then once I got that, find someone who actually has the results. And then for me, it was, you know, Master resonated with me. And I saw those results. And I saw that through what I'm learning now on my own, as far as law of attraction goes, as far as energy goes, in addition to the fact that, like, he's the same way, but he also has achieved that level of success. And I know can teach me what I need to know to get where I want to be. Now I have both. Now I have someone that I can invest in as far as investing in myself, who will share with me all that knowledge. And I'm nowhere near where I need to be or I'm going to be. I can tell you, though, that everything I've invested, it's paid off tenfold at least. And most people still can't. I mean, if I'm really, I'm trying to think in my head right now, I would say I'm a good $20,000 to $25,000 of investing in myself over time. The value that I have out of that is way more than that, though. And the thing about it is, it doesn't stop. I can't speak for other people. I don't know what their relationships are like, but like now I have a relationship with Master Akarshana. I get to go to his house. I get to collaborate with him. I get to work with him. I get to train with him. And now that doesn't cost. Now I'm part of the team. So everything, like it, the old me would have thought, like, I got to find a way to become part of the team to get all that training for free. It's investing in myself and taking action on that that got me to the point where being part of his team even became a reality. And this is just another one of those say yes and go with it.
Yeah, I find that anyone can take this journey by doing two things. If you trust your gut, you're essentially shooting out into the universe a massive antenna, okay? And you just have to keep going along with it. And as your energy increases, that antenna gets stronger. You keep going forward and forward and forward until you're here. You're saying yes, and then you're on stage and you're at Branson's house. But what's crucial is that people forget that they've come from somewhere, and you have to tidy up the mess. You've got to undo the knots. And so you can't make the same mistake twice moving forward. But because you're part of the past, past things are going to come into play again. So it's called the patterns are going to recur. And most people, they try and move forward and they relapse and they can't understand why they're not getting that break. So when they come back around, don't make the same mistake twice. If you always leave your coat on the floor, hang it up. If you always, you know, put your computer on, say, sleep, for example, and the phone and the cost goes up, shut down. You know, put your keys in the bowl so you know where they are rather than throw them on your bed. If you keep not making the same mistake twice whilst trusting your gut moving forward, you literally will transition. It's that transition between relapsing because it doesn't work and understanding why it's not working, because you're letting the old patterns occur and that's controlling the present. And you don't want to have this at present. You want this at present. So not making the same mistake twice and moving forward, trusting your gut. I remember, and I still do this now, not making the same mistake twice. And I do not make the same mistake twice. And I haven't made the same mistake twice for 7 years. If I'm late, I get up an hour earlier. If I piss during the night, I go for 3 pisses before I go to bed. I never make the same mistake twice. Just quickly, I've got another podcast at 4. Quickly plug anything. So you've already plugged it, so I can just quickly go. And then we'll just continue the next few minutes.
I don't really know that I have anything huge to plug because I'm work in progress. So I guess I'll just plug if anybody's interested in like following the journey or learning more about myself, Master Sri, anything about speaking, coaching, how to achieve any of the shifts that I've spoken about at all, hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com/ScubaSteveOfficial. It's pretty obvious. If you've seen this face, you'll recognize the guy in the picture. I just started Instagram. Haven't really done anything with it yet, but it's Scuba_Steve_Official. Look me up, follow me.
Right. So yeah, so people they want this like thing in the future and they are probably in hell. I call it a Lamborghini tied to a lamppost in first gear. You're trying to move forward, but you're being pulled back and the wheels are spinning, right? Mm-hmm. Not making the same mistake twice. It's overlooked. Like you hear business people say, you know, don't make the same mistake twice. But you can apply that to your life. Like it's an actual concept where things won't happen if, as long as you put a system in place like a business so they don't happen again. If an employee cuts themselves because they tripped on a bit of glass or tripped on a wire, you hide the wires behind the desk. If, for example, you piss your wife off because you've left the toothpaste on, then put the toothpaste lid on and say, look, I'm sorry about that. And you've put a system in place. People just let the same things happen over again. And those little things like hanging your coat up, toothpaste, just simple shit like that is the reasons why people, they never quite get to the light. It's almost like they're going through brambles in the woods to get to the ocean. And all these brambles are fucking like getting caught up in them. And they're just getting angry and kicking them and ripping themselves. You've got to cut the bramble where it's caught, throw it over there and make sure there's no brambles caught. And then look forward to see if there's any brambles ahead. Cut those. And then you step there and you look back. You've just got space of no brambles because you are managing the things in the way along the way. And people, you know, they try and move forward, but they have to understand you can't just fucking jump forward after 25 years, probably more years of living a certain way. You can't just stop that pattern. It's like going to the boss. I'm working myself. What the fuck are you on? I go back to your office. No, literally, I'm resigning right now. I'm working for myself. What do you mean? I'm just going to work from home. But you haven't got a laptop. I've got a friend's laptop. What the fuck? Shut up, John. No, I'm being serious. Like, you know what I mean? Right, I'm going to stop this now. I'm going to wait there. I'll just say goodbye, okay? If you've enjoyed this episode, I have many more for you to listen to, so go back and have a look at the old ones. Also, make sure that you have subscribed and notifications are turned on so you know when I've released a new one. Follow me on Instagram. Yes, King Oliver. Have a great day.